cities who have jobs, friends, and colleagues rarely become. The people I'd had in my life interpreted my madness as a reason to keep away. They said later they thought I'd be embarrassed to be seen that way, that I would not be myself. I would both behave in ways extravagantly beyond the pale, and ways meaningless in terms of who I am. From the position of medicine and society, I'd lost my claims to a valid existence. My thoughts became a manifestation of a sick organ, my brain, and therefore were pointless and meant to be fixed, much like the skipped beats of my erratic heart. The problem was, none of this thinking made sense to me any longer. In 2019, the story I tell in this book became fully present for me, and I realized how fully present it is for millions of people who are in their own version of isolated rooms. The United States is experiencing unprecedented levels of psychiatric misery, which have risen in tandem with unprecedented levels of citizens in psychiatric treatment and on meds. The rise began long before the pandemic. The neurodivergent are dying now still, as they should not be dying. Those diagnosed with a major mental disorder in the United States have a life expectancy 20 to 30 years shorter than those who aren't so diagnosed. Part of the loss of life lies in how they're medicated. 1 in 4 jailed individuals in the United States is in psychiatric crisis. 1/5 of police shootings involve psychiatric episodes, most harmless. Our hospital system for mind care is so bad that exposés are hard to keep up with. Reports published in the last several years by the Seattle Times describe hospitals over-medicating and holding on to patients to bilk insurance, ignoring calls from families and leaving patients open to abuse from other patients. A member of my family was in one of these hospitals, and it sickens me to recall it. My own experiences include not just abusive over-treatment, but hospitalized teenagers treated as sexual prey. The Devil's Castle started with the Nazi massacre of the disabled and neurodivergent. The subtitle, Nazi Eugenics, Euthanasia, and How Psychiatry's Troubled History Reverberates Today, grew with the book. I researched that euthanasia story with the urgency of someone who could have been a victim, whose loved ones could have been victims. Hundreds of thousands died within and without the Reich, many through a euthanasia program called Axion T4. T4 built gas chambers into asylums. Euthanasia grew out of the 19th century eugenics movement, the drive to remove tainted hereditary lines from society. Eugenics flourished in the United States before and after the war. It hasn't ended. Programs of euthanasia and sterilization don't just live in the past, terrible but finished. Their aftershocks are terrible and here. Eugenics thrived, and still does, on the language of humans as vermin, humans as poisoning the blood. It thrived, and still does, on reductive theories of human souls and minds. Before Germany began sterilizing, the United States led the world in that procedure, sterilizing tens of thousands before the war and after it. Both the United States and Germany considered programs to kill those diagnosed as mentally different. Germany got there first. A German psychiatrist named Emil Kraepelin, a eugenicist and anti-Semite, lived and worked in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Kraepelin did not know me, but he had his opinions. Kraepelin didn't consider me, or 2019 me, capable of human experiences, like losing a job or falling in or out of love. The idea that thoughts and feelings could be not the work of the psyche, but an organ's meaningless skipped beats, comes to us from Kraepelin. Kraepelin believed Jews had a natural connection to mental illness, and he trained some of the worst Nazi doctors. Kraepelin also became the father of modern psychiatry, so much so that, asked for a Kraepelin biography, my browser's artificial intelligence starts with that phrase. Kraepelin changed pre-war psychiatry with his theories of mental